White coast, bright screens, midnight on repeat. Counting tiny stutters in the DNA beating, but so quiet in tumors that shout, looking for the crack with the truth.
Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine for a second that the cellular spell checker in a child's DNA, like the system that catches and fixes microscopic typos as cells divide, was just completely broken from birth.
Right, not just struggling a bit, but entirely offline.
Yeah, entirely offline. What actually happens when those genetic typos are just allowed to pile up unchecked day after day?
Well, you end up with a catastrophic level of genomic instability. The whole fundamental architecture of the cell's instruction manual just degrades, mutating way faster than the body can handle.
And the stakes there are incredibly high. For a child born with this broken spell checker, there is a near 100% chance of developing aggressive, life-threatening cancers before they even reach adulthood. So the question is, how could a simple blood test not only catch this broken spell checker before it's too late, but actually read the specific pattern of the typos to find out exactly which genetic part is missing?
Answering that, I mean, it changes the entire landscape of pediatric oncology. We're talking about moving from educated guesses to highly specific functional genomic blueprints.
Exactly. So today we're taking a deep dive into this groundbreaking new study that totally flips how we diagnose the syndrome. Our mission today is to figure out how finding a specific flavor of genetic typo is actually saving children's lives. And before we get into the mechanics of that, we really need to acknowledge the massive collaborative effort here.
Oh, absolutely. The scale of this is huge.
Yeah. Today, we celebrate the work of the researchers at the Hereditary Cancer Group at Idabel in Spain, the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto, and the International IRRD and C4CM MRD consortiums who have advanced our understanding of childhood cancer predisposition. I mean, it takes global teamwork to crack rare mysteries like this.
It really does. And to understand the magnitude of what they've done, we should probably define the clinical problem for everyone listening. The condition is called constitutional mismatch repair deficiency, or CMMRD. As you mentioned, it's extraordinarily rare and highly penetrant.
And highly penetrant in genetics just means...
It means that if you have the mutation, the likelihood of expressing the disease is almost absolute. You are going to develop it.
Right, and we really need to emphasize why getting this diagnosis right is a matter of life and death for these kids. By age 20, patients with CMMRD have a greater than 90% chance of developing severe cancers. We're talking high-grade brain tumors, hematological malignancies like lymphomas, early-onset colorectal cancers. The mean age of onset is, what, just 7.5 years old?
7.5, yeah. It's devastating. Yeah. The mechanism driving this is rooted in these biallelic germline pathogenic variants.
Okay, let's break that down a bit.
Sure. So germline means the mutation is inherited, right? It's present in every cell from conception. And biallelic means the child inherited a defective copy of a mismatch repair gene from both parents.
So they have zero backup copies.
Exactly, no backup. These genes, specifically MLH1, MSH2, MSH6, and PMS2, are the pillars of the DNA mismatch repair system. And what's fascinating here is that PMS2 is actually the most frequently mutated gene in this group, but it's famously difficult to diagnose.
Why is it so hard to spot?
Because of something called pseudogenes.
Yeah.
They're basically genomic copycats that just confuse the sequencing machines.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the clinical reality of what happens when those pillars fall is huge. When a child with CMMRD develops a tumor, the standard instinct is to hit it with traditional alkylating chemo, right? Like temozolomide, which is standard for things like glioblastoma. But those drugs fail spectacularly here.
They do, and they fail because of how those alkylating agents actually function biologically. Those drugs are designed to intentionally inflict massive damage to the cancer cell's DNA.
Right.
But the drug itself doesn't kill the cell. It relies on the cell's own intact DNA repair system to recognize that catastrophic damage and say, okay, this is beyond fixing, and trigger apoptosis, basically cellular suicide.
Wow. So if a child has CMMRD, their repair system is totally offline. The chemo bombards the tumor with damage, but the cell has no spell checker to even notice the damage is there.
Exactly. It just ignores the massive toxicity and keeps dividing. The chemo is essentially useless, but you're still subjecting the child to severe systemic toxicity.
That's awful.
It is. However, knowing a child has CMMRD allows oncologists to immediately pivot to a treatment that exploits this broken system, which is immune checkpoint inhibitors.
Immunotherapy. Because the tumor cells are accumulating thousands of typos, they start making weird mutated proteins that normal cells don't make, right?
Spot on. The immune system sees those strange proteins as foreign invaders. We just have to give the immune system the right drugs to take the brakes off so it can attack. So the diagnosis directly dictates the treatment. We have to diagnose CMMRD fast.
But historically, our tools for that have been pretty bad. I mean, think of it like this. If your DNA is a 1,000-page book, standard microsatellite instability tests, or MSI tests, only look at 5 specific words to see if the entire spell checker is broken.
It's an incredibly tiny sample size.
Right, and it was originally designed for adult cancers. Those standard 5-marker tests miss CMMRD tumors entirely, most of the time. They yield only an 18% sensitivity rate.
And the hurdle gets even steeper with PMS2, like I mentioned, because of those pseudogenes.
I've heard pseudogenes described as, like, static on a radio. But that doesn't really explain how they trick a sequencer. It's more like trying to find a crucial document on your computer. But there are 10 fake shortcut files with the exact same name that lead nowhere. The sequencer keeps opening the wrong files, right?
Yeah, there's a much better way to look at it, yeah. Pseudogenes are these evolutionary relics. They look almost identical to the real PMS2 gene, but they're completely non-functional decoys. So when our next-gen sequencers try to read the gene, they accidentally read the decoys. The data is just an unreadable mess.
Plus, you have variants of unknown significance, where we see a change, but we don't know if it actually breaks the gene. So we've got an aggressive childhood cancer, a tiny window to act, a test that only looks through a keyhole, and a genome full of decoy files. How did the IDABEL team fix this?
Well, they obviously needed a wider lens. So they developed and validated something called Highly Sensitive Assessment of MSI, or the HSMSI assay. Instead of 5 markers, it targets a custom panel of exactly 192 microsatellites.
Okay, let's define what a microsatellite actually is for anyone not living in a genetics lab.
Fair enough. Microsatellites are short, repeating sequences of DNA letters, like ATATAT, over and over. Because they're so repetitive, the cellular machinery that copies DNA easily slips or stutters there.
It's like trying to type the same word 50 times in a row without making a typo.
Exactly, it's tough. So if the mismatch repair system is offline, these repetitive regions are the very first places where errors will accumulate.
Makes sense. So the researchers ran this 192 marker panel on a blinded cohort, 66 blood samples and 24 CMMRD tumor samples. But they didn't just test it in a vacuum. They pitted the HSMSI scores against logic scores, which are also called MMRDNs.
Right, and logic sequences the entire genome at a low pass level to look for instability across millions of microsatellites, not just 192. It's the ultimate stress test for a new tool.
But I have to push back here. Wait, if the logic test already looks at the entire genome, why are we trying to shrink our view down to 192 markers? Doesn't more data mean a better diagnosis? Why not just read the whole genome every time?
I mean, that is the constant tension in modern genomics comprehensiveness versus clinical utility. Whole genome sequencing is incredibly thorough, but it takes massive computational power and significant time. With a rapidly progressing childhood cancer, you just don't have weeks to wait for a supercomputer to crunch millions of data points.
Ah, okay. So the 192 marker panel is like a proxy, a way to get the same answer without the bioinformatics bottleneck?
Yes. It's flexible enough for standard sequencing platforms in clinical labs, has low computational requirements, and a fast turnaround time.
Okay, so let's look at how well that proxy actually performed. The researchers set a predefined score threshold of 4.57%. So out of the 192 genetic spots, if more than about 8 or 9 showed typos, the sample was flagged for CMMRD. And using that, the HSMSI test hit 98.5% sensitivity and 100% specificity in detecting CMMRD directly from a blood draw.
Which is incredible. 100% specificity is massive. It means zero false positives among the controls, which even included patients with other complex cancer syndromes like Lynch or Leiframini syndrome. It didn't get confused.
Wow. And the sensitivity was nearly perfect, too. 31 out of 32 CMMRD individuals correctly identified. The one case it missed is actually super interesting biologically. It scored a 3.70, so just below the threshold, but still higher than healthy controls.
Right. That patient was clinically atypical. They had a hypermorphic variant.
Meaning the broken gene wasn't completely destroyed, just severely impaired.
Exactly. It retained a tiny fraction of its original function. So this specific patient didn't develop their first tumor until they were 40, which is practically unheard of for CMMRD. The assay accurately picked up on that slightly lower level of instability.
And when they correlated the HSMSI scores from the blood directly with the whole genome logic scores, they got an R value of 0.89. To put that in perspective, looking at just these 192 spots gives you almost the exact same picture of systemic instability as spending weeks scanning the whole genome.
It's like predicting a national election by polling one perfectly representative neighborhood.
No.
And it wasn't just blood. The assay successfully detected instability in all 24 tumor samples, whether they originated in the brain, colon, or blood.
Okay, but we still have a major lingering problem. The assay proves the spell checker is broken by finding typos. But to finalize the diagnosis, clinicians still need to know which specific gene is mutated. And if it's PMS2, we still have all those decoy files. How do they solve the pseudogene problem if they aren't reading the gene itself?
This is the best part. They stopped trying to read the blueprint of the broken machine and started looking at the specific footprint the machine left on the factory floor. They analyzed the actual types of typos, the indels, or insertions and deletions happening at these 192 markers.
Right. Here's where it gets really interesting. When the cellular copying machine stutters, it usually drops a letter. So CMMRD blood usually has a massive proportion of one base pair deletions, like 77% of the errors were deletions on average.
Yes, for patients with MLH1, MSH2, or MSH6 mutations, they follow that standard pattern. The copying machine was dropping letters. But the patients with biallelic PMS2 mutations, the ones hidden by decoys, showed a completely different biological signature.
Instead of dropping letters, the system was constantly adding an extra letter, a significantly higher proportion of one base pair insertion.
Exactly. This specific flavor of genetic typo became a definitive diagnostic marker. This insertion signature identified biallelic PMS2 carriers with an accuracy of 0.997. It's practically flawless.
It's just a brilliant workaround. You bypass the decoys entirely by looking at the functional consequence of the mutation. Does the blood show the insertion signature? Yes. Then they have a PMS2 mutation, definitively. You don't even have to sequence the tricky gene.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the clinical implications cannot be overstated. A fast, definitive diagnosis diverts these kids away from toxic chemo and straight toward immunotherapy. It also tells us how aggressively we need to screen them. And they even looked at predicting the timeline of the disease.
Yeah, they found a negative correlation between the instability score in the blood and the age of the first tumor diagnosis, an R value of negative 0.43. So the higher the typo rate in the blood, the younger the patient was when cancer appeared.
Which tracks biologically. A higher baseline mutation rate means you're going to roll those disastrous genetic dice much faster.
But we have to be careful not to present this as a crystal ball. The study is very transparent about confounding factors.
Oh, absolutely. The age when the blood is drawn matters, because typos accumulate over time. The specific gene affects the baseline too, like MSH6 mutations tend to have lower overall instability scores than PMS2 mutations.
And the paper also dives into the sheer chaos inside the tumors themselves. The blood gives a stable germline picture, but the tumors acquire secondary somatic mutations, like POLE or PLD1. Wait, let me try to translate this. If the mismatch repair system is the proofreader, genes like POLE and PLD1 are the typist putting letters on the page, right?
That is exactly the dynamic. They are polymerases, the enzymes physically copying the DNA, and they have their own built-in proofreading ability.
So if a tumor starts with a broken proofreader from CMMRD and then randomly mutates to break the typist too, you've got a blindfolded typist and a sleeping proofreader. The mutation rate goes into overdrive.
We call that ultra-hypermutation. When a tumor gets a POLE mutation on top of CMMRD, the sheer volume of chaotic typos can actually mask that specific PMS2 insertion signature within the tumor tissue. The noise just browns out the signal.
Which perfectly highlights why a highly sensitive blood test is so vital. You read the baseline signature in the blood before the tumor scrambles everything.
Exactly. Because of all these variables, we can't use a single blood score as an absolute timeline yet. We need large, prospective collections of samples over time to see if a sharp spike in the score predicts an imminent tumor.
Right, watch the trend line, not just one data point. But even so, as a pure diagnostic tool today, this is a monumental leap. I mean, look at the suspected cases in their cohort where standard genetics were hopelessly ambiguous because of the pseudogenes. This assay came in, flagged this systemic functional instability, and provided undeniable evidence for a life-saving diagnosis.
The ability to definitively say, yes, this child has CMMRD, without spending weeks fighting through genomic static, it opens the door to precision medicine when they need it most.
So to summarize all this, the new HS-MSI assay uses a targeted panel of 192 genetic markers to accurately detect CMMRD from a simple blood draw. And beyond just diagnosing the syndrome, the specific pattern of genetic insertions it uncovers definitively pinpoints the tricky PMS2 gene bypassing those sequencing hurdles entirely.
It's a fundamental shift. We're moving from reading the code to reading the consequence of the code, and leaves us with a really fascinating question. What does this mean for the future of diagnosing other complex genetic syndromes? Could the specific flavor of DNA errors, these unique functional fingerprints, become the ultimate diagnostic shortcut across all of genomics?
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
White coast, bright screens, midnight on repeat. Counting tiny stutters in the DNA beating. Blood so quiet in tumors that shout. Looking for the crack where the truth leaks out. A missing repair can slip through the seams, but patterns don't lie in the data streams. One gene leaves a fingerprint sharp and clear. Turn the noise to signal, bring it near. Running high sensitive, light up the dark. Microsatellite spark. When mismatch repair falls out of tune, we read the scars like a rising moon. If it's PMS2, the one they show. The doubt used to grow, 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 grow. Doubt used to grow. Rip it, go, go, rip it, go, go. Panels on the table, 192 lines. Every repeated question, every call a sign. Scores that climb higher when the clock starts young. A warning in the rhythm before words are sung. Not every case is live, not every clue is wide. Sometimes it's a single step where the truth will hide. So we map the indels, let the numbers talk. Guiding watchful days down a steady OR. On a high sensitive, light up the dark. Microsatellite spark. From blood to tissue, we can name the tone. So the next move's chosen, not guessed alone. And if it's PMS2, the one they shows a clear little answer. Now the future knows.